Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, we're having a day. Hope you're having a day. I'm having a day. I just got to finally meet Bob Fitzgerald after all these years. Finally met him. I know you, Matt Kolsky, and Fitz go way, way, way back.
Yeah. Longtime co-workers.
Firm handshake.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Talked to him for years. Watched him, of course. Finally got to meet him. This is Ratto Kolsky and Whitey in for Damon on 95.7 The Game. I have a question here about show policy since I'm a visitor. What is the show policy on verbal mulligans? And I'm asking for a friend. Do you allow people, a friend of mine said something about Dragan Bender yesterday, and he's wondering if he needs to take it back, and I'm just wondering what the policy is.
Depends on who it is.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, if it's somebody we like, we'll look the other way. But if it's, say, Nash, probably not.
Yesterday, I was talking about Bender. Hey, watch Bender. He has a chance to make the team. So I'm not walking that back yet. But after last night, I just wanted to know what the policy was in case I ever need to.
Yeah, you got some leeway. Huh. No problem.
He did have 5 rebounds last night.
Yeah.
Just didn't make any shots.
Yeah. He looks a little lost, but kind of everybody does. I think we underestimate the difficulty of just putting together a competent effort in terms of players not having played together ever.
Right.
Because there's been some of that these last 2 games, really, where it's just these guys don't know where the other guy's going to be. They don't really know any sets. They don't. And the result is a lot of missed threes and bad turnovers.
Yeah, this has been a real through-the-looking-glass year for the Warriors, right? Nothing is as it seems. Everything's upside down. You look at the upside-down standings, and the Warriors are on top of those. That said, still, there have been some stranger-than-strange developments. For example, you look at the muddled mass at the bottom of the Western Conference playoff picture. You got Memphis in there, right? You got a number of teams jumbled trying to get into that 8 spot. Well, the Warriors, and they only have 12 wins, right? They've beaten Memphis. They've beaten New Orleans twice. They've beaten Portland. They've beaten Phoenix. They cannot beat the Sacramento Kings. They cannot compete for some reason. And I know you talk about the Warriors and game to game, it's a different lineup every game. They can't compete with the Sacramento Kings this year. And they cannot make a 3-point shot. And the Kings don't miss a 3-point shot for some reason against the Warriors this year.
Small sample size and not terribly relevant. I mean,
I know it, but it's just
look,
odd.
I mean, the Warriors, I mean, I didn't think they were particularly devoted at the competition part of last night. But at this point, they've sort of established that this year doesn't matter.
Right.
And they're 12-46, and I don't know how you put a happy hat on that. But it's interesting to me that if you go in order of games played this year, and I'm not even going to say the names. I'm just going to tell you what their role in the NBA is. Rookie, scrap heap, rookie, gone, 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 scrap heap, Draymond Green. So, and by scrap heap, I mean guys who've been on other teams and haven't stuck anywhere.
Are you counting Andrew Wiggins as scrap heap?
I'm talking about games played for the Warriors.
Oh.
So Wiggins is not on this list.
Okay, so this
I'm talking about season-wide.
So you're talking people who have played the most games for the Warriors and the nature of their career.
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think they should be as bad as they are, but I think by now they should at least have somewhere in the neighborhood of 18 to 20 wins. But the fact is, this team, these 20 guys are by and large as awful as you've seen maybe in the last 8 to 10 years. This is a terrible team. And I get the circumstances for it, but that's got to be noted.
I mean, if you're
these are bad results by any standard.
If you're just talking talent, I think this team, I don't know, it's not that surprising that they are this bad. Like, the next worst team in the West is the Timberwolves. And in just in terms of who's been available this year, the Timberwolves have had much better talent available all year long. Like, much better.
So, Ray, you're right. It doesn't really matter that much.
I'm merely pointing out that a game like last night, while it happens more often than this team should allow, it's not making much difference whether they're 18 and 40 or 12 and 46.
Right.
But at 12 and 46, games like last night where nobody looked very good, I don't know. I think the law of big numbers should make this a better record, if nothing else. The circumstances are the circumstances.
What are the odds they hit on one of the players they bring in here? Bender, Juan Toscano-Anderson is a great story. We know that. They just picked up from the G League a guard from Kentucky, undrafted Michael Mulder. Marquise Chris, obviously, he's not a guy they just – he had some
longer-term plans for him. I don't know.
Do for him. It's not even fair to put him in that category. It's just that when they picked him – I know I was listening to you guys when they picked up Marquise Chris, and you were asking, as everyone was, wait, why did they do that? So perhaps – I'm not saying Dragan Bender's the next Chris, but maybe you hit on a couple of these. You might as well, right, with what you got left in the season, with what you could hope to accomplish, you might as well take some flyers on these guys.
Yeah, but that's – I mean, the longer you do that, though – the smaller the talent pool is. I mean, other than Chris, the other three guys you mentioned are at best G League players. They just are. And I think after a while, you just get tired of slogging through the same game over and over again. Winning 3 of 25 is simple. I mean, that's just not a tolerable standard. Just isn't.
Except Steph's coming back. Things are looking brighter. They're putting a team together rather than if you want to turn one apart.
I guess I'm not sure what that means to say that's not a tolerable standard.
Games like last night's that are not worth watching, simply not worth watching, are happening an awful lot this year. And it's nobody's fault. I mean, there's nobody to blame for this. But this has been a comprehensively awful year by any standard, let alone a team that's saying it's not tanking.
I don't think anyone's debating that.
No,
right?
I'm not trying to make an argument about anything. I'm just saying that when you have to slog through games like that, you start wanting to just avert your eyes and watch something else.
Yeah, well, if you're a real fan, you're trying to find ways you can...
No, if you're a delusional fan, real fans can actually walk away from things. I mean, you can actually say, this is not worthy of my attention.
Okay,
and still be a real fan.
Yeah, but then you're looking, well, how do I maintain my interest in this? You start to look towards next year on the Chilton Autobody text line. Thoughts, Warriors need a backup point guard. Mike Conley is a backup point guard for the Warriors. What do you think from the 213? He makes an awful
lot of
money.
Him?
Yeah, I know. But my point is that's what you do as a fan sometimes. You start to mull things over and who's coming next. And, hey, I'm hearing maybe Giannis is still a possibility.
Oh, God.
That's how you stay engaged to a degree.
That's not advice, it's
an observation.
If you have to do that to stay engaged, then you just want to be lied to.
Well, but you just said there's no reason to stay engaged with what's actually happening. So if people are fans of the team and want to stay engaged with the team, isn't...
Then they have to lie to themselves.
Is it lying to you? I don't think
yes,
it's lying
it
to... Okay. Well, I don't think it's lying to yourself to look at Marquise Chris, who did play well last night, for what it's worth, and think about what that means for next year. I don't think it's lying to yourself to watch Damian Lee and Andrew Wiggins and Kevon Looney as viable, relatively significant, depending on the guy, parts of what's going to happen next year. Eric Paschal. And I don't think it's crazy. I think to say Juan Toscano-Anderson or Dragan Bender or Kai Bowman is at best a G League player, I think is pretty unfair.
Don't take this the wrong way.
I'm unfair, but I look. This isn't. They've had 20 guys here, of which they are committed to five. In for any rational reason, everybody else is more than merely expendable.
Kevon Looney, don't take this the wrong way. You mentioned Kevon Looney. He's hard to watch right now, and we're all rooting for him. It's just hard to watch to see him struggling and just hoping that whatever neuropathic problems he's having, that he's getting better. We don't know.
Totally agree.
He struggles so much. I'm not disagreeing with you, just an observation.
No, you're right.
When you brought his name up.
I agree with you, but isn't that even something you're learning about what the prospects are for next year? I'm not saying it's all good. No, it's been a terrible season. There's no debate about that. They're 12-46, for God's sakes, and for the very, very most part, they've played true to the talent that's been available. Like, they just, I don't even want to say pushing back, but the reason I don't totally know how to respond to that being an unacceptable standard is it's not a record born of mistakes. It's a record born of unfortunate accidents for the most part, you know, and I don't know, I'm not sure what the, and I know Ray's not trying to make this argument, but if the argument was they should have done X to avoid winning only 12 games to this point in the season, I have no idea what X would be.
The only reason it's acceptable, Ray, is because too many fans to whom you're saying you think it should be unacceptable, they are assuming that next year it's going to get a whole lot better again. Maybe they're wrong, maybe they're right, but that's the only reason why people have been as accepting of this gap year as they have been.
Totally.
And
I think that's a...
I'm not disagreeing with you, but that's what's going on.
Agreed. And that's a fair expectation, I think. Like that, sure, lots could happen where they don't become competitive again next year, but I think there's every reason, based on the specific situation, to believe that odds are they'll obviously be better than this, but potentially be a pretty decent contender next year.
From the 510, I guess they should be above 500 when they can't even have a consistent lineup. Let's see.
Nobody said they should be 500.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stupidity that just...
When Chris came up, you guys slammed him. Now you sing his praise. Wow. Actually, Matt Kolsky's been on the Chris bandwagon from day one. I was a little skeptical. It's a great story. I did not think he'd be in line to be your starting center next year. Clearly he is. Yeah. Coming up, we got Ramona Shelburne going to join us next. By the way, Steve Kerr at 5 o'clock today. And what did I tell you about the newest...
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Whitey in for Damon on 95.7 The Game. Tomorrow night, the Warriors taking on the Lakers, so Ramona Shelburne's going to join us about 10 minutes here. That is Warriors and Lakers tomorrow night if they don't tear down Chase Center after what Dibley and Lowe did on it this morning. Congratulations, Lowe Neal, for winning the disgrace at the Chase.
Did on it is the right... way to talk about it, I think.
I have to say, last night I was walking down the stairs to get into the media room, and there's an usher there that I see all the time. I don't know his name. I didn't know he knew my name. Just, you know, you see a guy every day at the same place. I say, hey, how you doing? How are you? And he goes, hey, who's going to win tomorrow? And at first I had no idea what he was talking about. Then I realized, oh, yeah. And I got to be honest, I went with my guy Dibs.
Yeah. It was aptly named. I thought it was truly hilarious for like 15 minutes, then it, you know, at a certain point, but
nobody was injured that we know of, right? Thank goodness.
Like, sometimes two sides engage in an athletic competition and you walk away like, man, I know somebody won, but that was just a well-played contest that made me feel good about sports and about both teams, and like, what a great thing. And this was the polar opposite of that.
I was going to ask, are you comparing what they did to an athletic competition?
Yeah, I'm saying this was not an athletic competition.
Okay.
It did not make you feel good about sports or about the people involved in it. And you just walked away thinking, wow, that's two guys embarrassing themselves.
Would robot officials have helped at all?
No, Kalena was the best part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kalena did his job better than anyone else on that court. I don't know if you would agree.
Yeah, what I saw, I made the mistake of actually, I was having a bagel when I turned it on this morning, and that, no, it's like, nah.
So have you been able to eat yet today?
Not yet.
Yeah.
I'll try again.
Fair enough.
This evening I'll have
I get it.
You know, some toast.
Yeah. Yeah, ginger. I did get goes. You ginger ale from the kitchen.
Yeah, I thought Dibs had him. He came back, started knocking down a few jumpers. I thought, here we go, here we go. And I think he just faded.
They both faded before either of them scored a point, first of all. I do appreciate that Lowe eventually went to his obvious strategy, which was turn around, man, and put that butt into that old man and
right.
just slowly push him under the basket.
Yeah.
Now, the problem was it seemed to take Lowe a while to realize just how far under the basket he had to push Dibley before he himself was in range to make a shot. It was directly under the basket is the range.
Had he been on a ladder directly under the basket, he would have been in range. Anything else was
a
little bit out of his range.
Dibs had a bad shooting day from the field. Lowe had a bad shooting day from the restricted area.
Dibs is not a shooter. He's a scorer. That's the thing about Dibs.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'll say, like, there are moments when you're like, maybe 20 years ago, to be clear, Dibs 20 years ago and Lowe now, maybe Dibs would have had a shot here. But, yeah, they were both so burned out by 3 minutes into that thing.
I was burned out sooner than that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And we have some reports on the text line. Apparently, Dibs did strain his calf. That's too bad. I think we have a disgrace at the Chase post-game report.
No excuses other than the ref, my head, my calf, my knee, and I didn't get a good night's sleep.
There you go. Dan Dibley.
That's Dan Dibley.
So assuming that they go ahead and play basketball there tomorrow night or they don't fumigate the place, and they would have time to do that, the Warriors and the Lakers tomorrow night. I know, Ray, any thoughts? People have been wondering what you thought of the disgrace at the Chase.
I made an executive decision early on not to watch a moment of it.
Okay.
Because there are some sitcoms where you know the plot when the opening credits run.
So you loved it then?
I thought...
You loved every second of it that you watched?
yes. I viewed it in the proper template, which was complete and utter abstinence. It is, after all... Ash Wednesday.
Yeah. Kolsky wants a piece of the winner, right?
I feel like I would fare extremely well in a station-wide one-on-one tournament between all talent. I'm handicapping Joe Shasky and I as favorites. With the caveat that I have not seen you play, nor have I seen Joe Fortenbaugh play. I haven't seen other people play. Those are the only two that I think...
I don't know a basketball from a hockey puck.
See, now, I do know you to be a hustler, so I don't trust a word you're telling me right now.
Hmm. Well, congratulations to everyone involved. What an event it was, and it really did create a surprising amount of buzz.
I think next time we got to have Ratto ref it.
I seriously would throw myself headlong into a chipper shredder before I would do that.
Yeah. By the way, somebody on the text line here, thank you, from the 408. Mr. Defender of Refs, Dibs, chirping at the refs.
Yes. Huh. From before,
come on,
again,
Dibs, you're better than that.
Before anyone scored a point.
That's the flaw.
Before anyone scored a point, everyone dribbled with their other hand on their knees and yelled at the referee.
Anyway, Ray, you were suggesting that the Warriors have not been the most watchable team this year. So I've heard from some fans who are explaining what they enjoy watching about the Warriors this year. Bill says, I watch the Warriors because I think this time more than anything is how we can get a measure of Steve Kerr's coaching ability. Can he squeeze the absolute best out of G League players? Also like to fantasize about how players like Chris and Pascal will work with a fully healthy team.
I think those are two great reasons to watch the Warriors.
Yeah. Someone else suggests I'm looking forward to Curry back to his pre-Durant MVP form next season. So no one's saying you're wrong.
By the way,
explaining what people are enjoying about the team.
Speaking of Curry.
Yeah.
Kerr was hedging his bets today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Look, I'm not saying that he's not playing. That's not what I'm after here. But I wanted to say they are trying to play this as carefully as they can because I don't think they're sure yet whether he's going to be ready.
Well, we should.
I think that's – they would like for people not to say, oh, it's absolutely Sunday, and then if it isn't, just have the whirlwind of, well, why isn't he ready?
Yeah.
That's the only thing that I find interesting about it. It's that they're even if everybody believes it's Sunday, they're trying to say, you don't know. And one, they're right. And two, I don't think they want to be perceived as wrong here. And some people will perceive them as wrong because that's what we do.
Yeah, well, we'll get a chance to ask Steve Kerr. And by the way, as far as you declaring yourself the top seed, I mean, Steiny played college basketball.
Well, yeah.
In a station one-on-one.
If we all played each other in our primes, Steiny would kill everybody, I think. I just don't know.
He's certainly Steiny old and washed up as a basketball player?
I don't know. I don't know if he's washed up as a basketball player. In fact, all I know about whether he's washed up as a basketball player is from him telling me he's washed up as a basketball player.
That's what all the greats do.
You're right.
Plus he
you
played
did, you just did it a minute ago. It's entirely possible that he is sandbagging and that Steiny would still come out and light it up.
Plus, he played back east. You know, he knows all the tricks of the trade.
Yeah. No. I'm not
all
trying to disrespect
Stockton
anybody.
Stuff, you know?
Someone else said Guru and Bonte. You know, look, I have played with Bonte and I've seen Guru play. And I'm just saying, I think I do pretty good.
What did you think of your guy, Andrew Wiggins, last night? I thought it was very interesting. You know, I pointed out, I've been kind of all over the place on Wiggins. I like Wiggins. I'm glad they got him. The more I watch him, the more I realize why Minnesota decided, maybe we're better off moving on here. Last night, he was the only guy who played in the game for either team not to grab a single rebound.
Yeah, I thought last night was a better night for the Andrew Wiggins disappears criticism than the terrible shooting night he had the night before, or the game before, rather. Last night to me is the perfect example of why people in Minnesota will be like, sure, he'll score. And even sometimes he won't be good and he'll score. Like 16 points is nothing to sneeze at. I think 14 were in the first half. But he did feel invisible.
Yeah, and to Ray's point, I mean, you look at some of the lineups that they put out on the floor last night, and Wiggins, he did take the offense into his own hands, if you will, because it looked like a number of times he realized, I am the only guy on the floor right now for us who is a reasonable threat to score.
And that's why, and because he can disappear in those moments, that's why Minnesota didn't get along with him as a player. And there's no reason to expect that to have changed in the 3 weeks he's been here. It's just, that's not what he's going to be asked to do. I mean, that's what it comes back to for me, which is why another reason I particularly look forward to the Steph Curry part of this.
You're getting a little backed up there just thinking about Lowe and Dibs playing
probably
basketball.
The two Twix I ate right before we went on air.
You just call them two Twix? Wow. Okay. What? Lowe and Dibs? Is it those two Twix?
Twix are for kids? No, the Twix candy bars that I ate are probably what choked me up more than the terrible basketball. Although now that I say that out loud, it probably was the terrible basketball more than the two Twix. Two Twix. Sorry. The point of all this is, if Wiggins is being asked to be your number one guy, you're not going to like that. You're not going to like it.
I think there's more to it than that. That is a fair point, and I agree with it. But I think sometimes that is used, I don't want to say it's used, but I think sometimes that can mask a larger underlying problem. And again, Ray has pointed this out a number of times. He's probably rolling his eyes as I say that because small sample size. I know, he just got here. But he disappears a lot, and I don't think the fact that he's going to fit better here as the third option is necessarily a reason why it explains why he would disappear at times. I think those are two separate things.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying what's causal or it explains it or defends it. I'm saying it's a problem in his game that is particularly noticeable when he's the best player on the floor. I'm saying I think it's a flaw that'll be marginally less noticeable when he's the third or fourth best player on the floor.
Let me see if I can find something we agree on. And as far as Wiggins goes, I totally disagree with this notion that's gaining, well, I don't even know if it's gaining traction or it's just there's a lot of buzz about it nationally that, hey, they got Wiggins because they want to trade him for Giannis. That is why they got him. I just don't understand that. I think that's massively delusional.
Well, no, it's idiocy. To call it delusional is to, you know, give it way too much credit because, one, Andrew Wiggins and any other such package is not worth Giannis, period. So it's not – there's nothing – that goes nowhere. And I don't even want to get into the salary cap implication.
Well, it's not even that. To me, there's two separate things. If someone called the Warriors tomorrow and said, hey, you know, for Andrew Wiggins and a couple of draft picks, you could have Giannis. Of course they'd have that conversation.
They'd make the deal even if it was with somebody who didn't own the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, that's of course they would do it. Of course they have interest in Giannis Antetokounmpo. Raise your hand if you have interest in Giannis Antetokounmpo. Everyone's hands went up, except Ray, because he's not really a hand raiser.
He would have no value for me. I don't have a team.
Giannis against Dibley, who do you like?
Oh, man. Now, you know what? Let's tease that ahead. At 3 o'clock, I'll tell you who I'd rather have, Dan Dibley or Giannis Antetokounmpo. Seriously, though, of course you're going to have that conversation. Of course you'd want to do that. But that's very different than acquiring Andrew Wiggins specifically to do that. Because, as Ray points out, in all likelihood, you can't. And secondly, I think they actually believe Wiggins could work.
Yeah, I believe it could work. But nights like last night, perhaps unfairly, perhaps fairly, perhaps I'm just wrong, perhaps I'm right, but nights like last night leave me with an unsettling feeling that, wow, the Warriors may be much further from where they hope to be next year than many of us have been assuming. That's really, how do you quantify that? I don't know. But nights like last night leave me feeling like, oh my goodness. It's kind of the same feeling I had when I saw their first exhibition game this year, which is a totally different circumstance, I know, when they played the Lakers and they just got destroyed. I had that same feeling like, wow, I don't think this is a very good team. Now, we know this team's not very good, but they've still got a lot of work to do to get back to the level of, well, anywhere close to what they've been the last 7 years. But we know that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think I'm just weary of this year. It's just been, You know, I mean, everybody's like, well, wait till Curry gets back. Wait till Curry gets back. I don't live in the world of excited anticipation. This has been a painful, gruesome slog for nearly 60 games now, and it will be 60 games if Curry plays on Sunday. That's a lot of time to watch basketball that is egregiously bad. It just, you know, I don't try to project guys out of what their current circumstances are. I think that's usually a fool's errand. It's just, I just look at this year and I went, God, this is worst case scenario Warriors of the 80s awful.
The Warriors hosting the Lakers tomorrow night, and with more from Lakerland, nice enough to join us, ESPN senior writer Ramona Shelburne. Ramona, how about the Lakers and the Pelicans last night? Boy, how much would the NBA love to see that in the first round of the playoffs this year?
Yeah, oh my gosh, right? Like, I thought that was kind of fun seeing the Laker kids, but, you know, there was a little old school, new school with Zion and LeBron, right? Because I keep trying to think who Zion reminds me of, you know? Keep trying to think, like, you know, which player, what the comp is. I always said Larry Johnson, but, like, seeing him out there against LeBron was pretty interesting, you know, just head-to-head. You know, just the way they look standing next to each other. You know what I mean? He's not LeBron. He has a different kind of game, but I don't know physically if you could find a better comp, right, in terms of the athleticism and the way they play.
What would be appealing about Pelicans-Lakers if you took those two guys off the floor? Or is that just I mean, and I really, it's an abstract argument, but I think most people want to see LeBron v. Zion. They're not necessarily married to Pelicans v. Lakers.
Well, it's interesting because there's this whole, you know, all those guys from the Lakers who got traded for Anthony Davis against Anthony Davis. You know, all the Laker kids, Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart and Lonzo, and then there's Anthony Davis against his former team, you know. So there's that drama of it. But I feel like it's sort of eclipsed by the Zion-LeBron dynamic. It just, like, you know, I was never sure how Zion's game was going to translate to the NBA when I saw him in college. Like, he seemed like a power dunker. Did he have enough? Can he shoot well enough? Did he have enough game outside of just being physically imposing and better than everyone? And, like, I think he is. I mean, from what we've seen so far, wow. Like that guy, if he can stay healthy, is a next-level kind of player. And so, yeah, you know, your question of what's appealing about that matchup beyond those two guys. Like, I don't know, are you into the revenge tour? Are you into that, you know, like people in New Orleans booing Anthony Davis and the Laker kids trying to get revenge on the team that traded them and gave up on them? That's kind of fun too.
All right, so we talk about this stuff all the time, and I start to worry we've lost perspective. Looking at this Warriors team from the outside, let's forget the summer and the draft pick and the mid-level exception and trade exception and all that stuff. If just what they have now was healthy, whereabouts would you have that finishing in the Western Conference, and how realistic is it in one offseason, in your mind, to turn that into a legitimate championship contender?
I mean, I was one of those fools who kept thinking the Warriors were going to be really good this year.
Right? Like, me too, Ramon. It's okay.
Before the year, like, I was like, look, they got Steph and they have Draymond. That's two-thirds of a team that won a title in 2015, and now they're on a quest to prove that it wasn't just Durant that made them win, right? Like, I talked myself into that. And I just, you know, I assumed Klay would be back right after All-Star, somewhere in and around March. And so you can close your eyes and see that team. But, you know, it's just the sort of like older, wiser version of 2015, and they're all still just as good. And but then I think what we've come to appreciate about that 2015 team that maybe we probably should have appreciated then, but we definitely do now, is, I mean, Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, yep. all that strength and numbers quality to that team, that actually really mattered. We all just saw, you know, Steph being Steph and how great they were. But I think that the depth of that team is what's really lacking. So when I close, I do think they'll add to this team in the offseason. They have, whether they make a giant trade or not, like, they have enough ways of doing that where they can go find another guy like Andre Iguodala, right? Like, they can find an impact piece, whether it's another star, I don't know. But if it's somebody like Andre, that'd be a heck of an ad. I think they go right back into contention.
Ramona Shelburne, nice enough to join us, ESPN senior writer. How heavy, Ramona, of a burden has Kobe's passing been for the Lakers? And do you have any sense of the extent to which Monday might help start to bring closure for the franchise and the team?
Yeah, I think it's been really heavy for the last month because, I mean, you just drive around Los Angeles, you just see Kobe everywhere, right? It's all anybody's been talking about. But I also believe that human beings cannot exist in that state for too long, right? Like, I know that people, have this deep over, you know, when a family member dies, like a parent or a spouse or whoever it is, like, it's a really heavy thing that you don't get over for a long time. But as sad as this was for the Lakers organization, a lot of the guys on the team didn't really know Kobe, right? Like, they knew of him. They may have played against him a few times. So it was the scope of the tragedy that was so terrible, but it's not like he was in their lives every single day. So I really think that it was the month long of mourning and people talking about it is, that was a long, heavy time that I don't think that the team can really exist in much longer. And I think Monday does give them a sense of closure. Like, we're obviously going to bring it up when it gets back to the playoffs, right? They're going to have to win for Kobe. It's going to be a storyline and something that they talk about all the time. The people at the Lakers who were the closest to Kobe, quite honestly, are the people who work for the Lakers, right? Like, you know, Rob Blanco was really close to them. Jeannie Buss, Linda Rambis, Kurt Rambis, like Judy Cito, who's the one of their lead trainers. I mean, she was Kobe's personal trainer for a long time, right? Those are the people who I think have like the deepest connection and the deepest wound that'll probably be real sad for a long time. But I think the team was ready to move on and move past that on Monday, and I think that did probably give them a pretty good way of doing so.
When, in your estimation, did the Frank Vogel's going to get fired really soon narrative die?
I mean, it never started. It died almost like from the very beginning of the year, right? Like, they lost that first game against the Clippers, and then they were really good. And it was like they never had, like, if they would have gone off to a really bad start, I think it would have just been there the whole year. But they were so good out of the gates that it just never even got going. If anything, it was over the summer, right? We were all kind of, he was just like the most random choice, right? Like, it was just, So if you would have told me the most unlikely person to be the next coach of the Lakers, like once they got rid of Luke Walton, if there were like Vegas betting odds, okay, like that was the like most unlikely name I would have thought of. I just never, where did that come from? There's no connection to the franchise. There's no, right? And so it was just so random that I don't, you know, I think almost people, like I was at his press conference and I'll never forget this. It was the first time that Rob Pelinka had spoken to the media since Magic Johnson called him out on First Take. And I mean, obviously that feels like a long time ago, right? And it was like, nobody even asked Frank a question. Like, it was like, I think somebody worked for the team, like the team broadcaster asked Frank a question or two, but then everybody just kept going back to Rob because it was like, you know, I mean, I think I went up to his agent afterwards and he was like, so how did he do? And I go, oh, I think he did great. And the surface, I go, to be honest, I think both of us just feel sorry for the guy, you know, like, I mean, he walked into such a tough situation and a tough position with the, you know, the way the press conference was and everything that was going on with the Lakers at that time.
The only question he did get asked was, how does he feel about Jason Kidd being assigned to his coaching staff, pretty much. All right, before we let you go, Ramona, I'm curious. We talked about how wide open this year would be from a championship contention standpoint, and we kind of have had a prevailing wisdom top three, certainly by this point, of Milwaukee and the two L.A. teams.
Yeah.
Outside of that group, who do you think is the most serious championship contender?
I like Boston. Jason Tatum's all of a sudden started to realize he's really good. And he started playing like that every night. And like you're not too young for this, right? I mean, I think that all-star nod for him was a big, big moment. And I think I like Boston a lot. I like, you know, I picked Philly before the year. I don't know. I'm not seeing it. They don't really show any signs of that. And the team nobody really wants to play in the playoffs is probably Houston right now because they're just such a strange matchup, right? Like now, like, you know, the Lakers played them like kind of real early on in this no center experiment time, and they lost that game. I don't think you can make too much of it just because of, you know, where it was right after Kobe passed. There was a lot of stuff going on, but like, I mean, it's just weird playing a team that plays no centers. It's just a strange matchup. So you have to impose your will on them. It's a game where like you'd think the Lakers have one of the best front court players in the league, and you know Anthony Davis, but you know he didn't exactly force Houston into a lot of difficult situations in that game. He kind of stayed on the perimeter and didn't really attack much. Like it's a tough match. I'll put Houston in there in the West. Utah, we thought they were going to make a run, and then they're just kind of falling apart lately.
Yep.
But Houston feels the most dangerous to me.
Thank you, Ramona, for your time. By the way, any go-to cold remedies? Your buddy Ray, and he's doing better, you know.
Yeah.
He's very tough. He's kind of had the sniffles this week, and we've been trying to help him out with some cold remedies. Do you have a go-to for your buddy Ray as far as a cold remedy?
You know what I do? I'm desperate to hear Ray's reaction to this, okay? So please let him just do his Ratto thing. I go to one of those, like, fancy juice bars, okay? Like, those just totally California, LA, San Francisco, whatever, you know, woo-woo juice bars. And I get one of those. I just go and I order like the lemon, cayenne, ginger, you know, turmeric, everything. I'm just like anything that could potentially help here. I just put it in there. And I just burn the back of my mouth with like the ginger and the cayenne and all that stuff. And it's, I don't know. I do that like almost every day where I get some to go. So I don't know. I think that helps. But mostly I think you just need to sleep a lot.
Like, and by how many days does that cut the length of your cold?
It makes me feel better, right? So I think it's a placebo effect. But there is something about like burning the back of your throat with like ginger and cayenne and all that stuff.
I was telling him yesterday. I just go hot water with ginger and honey. Boom, just burn your mouth with the ginger a little bit. It's good for you.
Yeah. The other thing I think is better is just literally take like some NyQuil and, you know, two or three NyQuil, just pop them and just go to sleep for as long as you possibly can.
Yeah.
So really all you're saying is get like three fingers of good bourbon, pour in some Windex, and throw that down your throat because you'll get the burning you're after and you'll get that numbness that NyQuil gives you.
Bingo.
Absolutely. There it is.
Thank you, Ramona. We appreciate it.
Do it.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.
All right. There you go, Ray.
Good work.
Coming up, yeah, coming up, Kolsky says this year's NBA champ will be someone you don't expect. This segment brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises.
The Pistons.
Kolsky continues on 95.7, The Game.
Whitey Gleason in for Damon, trying to talk Ray into getting going on our, well, his book, The True Unbreakable Sports Records, Ray. Talk about Wilt Chamberlain, 48.5 minutes per game 1 year. 48.5 minutes per game in a 48-minute game. Unbreakable.
It's like
unbreakable.
It's like having a, you know, GPA of 4.7 or something.
Yeah, yeah, although the kids do that now, too.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. In this day of load management, how about, Ray, the shortest game in Major League Baseball history in 1919, Jesse Barnes beats the Phillies 6-1, 51 minutes.
Yes.
That's not happening.
I wish.
No, the one that's not going to happen is Happy Jack Chesbro. 1904, 41 wins.
41 wins.
What year?
1904.
Okay.
You don't get, you've got 32 starts now.
So we're going to get going on our book then? You're going
to? No.
That's
no?
Why he was okay. So happy.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, you got Ratto, Kolsky, and Whitey on 95.7 The Game.
I'll write it with you, Whitey.
All right. There we go.
In honor, I'm going to read one first, then I'll get back to you.
In honor of low over dibs today, we were just talking about Frank Vogel. I know Frank Vogel was actually on Stupid Human Tricks years ago.
No.
He was on David Letterman's. Yeah,
what?
Yeah.
What did
yeah.
he do?
He was a kid, and he, like, I think he was just spinning a basketball on his finger, but there was something else to it. But what, which NBA coach do you think, you've already said, hey, if at a Station 101 tournament, you think you'd be right up there. Which NBA coach do you look at and say, I could take him. I used to say that about Budenholzer.
No.
And
he
then
could
I found
play.
Out he played overseas. And
yeah, he just, played at my at my alma mater.
Oh, did he?
Mm-hmm. Pomona College.
Yeah, he played professionally overseas. I don't think I could take him.
Frank Vogel brushed his teeth while a basketball spun on the other end of the toothbrush. It's pretty impressive.
Okay, that's better than just spinning the ball on your finger.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's pretty impressive stuff.
But don't you think you could take him?
Vogel?
Yeah.
No, not a guy who could spin a basketball on the other end of a toothbrush. Absolutely not. I think I'd have had a decent chance against Lawrence Frank years back.
Hmm.
The problem is a lot of these guys are pretty damn big. Like, you don't think of Steve Kerr as a big NBA coach.
Well, Lawrence Frank would have been perfect because he never actually even played in high school.
That's what I'm saying.
He was an NBA coach.
Like,
yeah.
Most of these guys at least were pretty, I mean, you know, even if you look at a guy like Bob Myers, right?
Well, he played at UCLA. I believe
that's what I'm saying.
On.
Like,
yeah.
Most of the guys in these positions were pretty good at some point. And, I was a pretty good intramural player at a Division III college.
Yeah, don't sell yourself short.
That's not like
being... Did you make any all-star teams or anything?
The intramural all-stars?
Yeah.
No, I don't believe I did.
Like second team or third team all-defense?
I think I was a third team... All intramural in my junior season.
That's something.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
Uh-huh. Back then I could jump, though, and run for longer than 30 seconds. So I've gone downhill.
There's a little something if you care to participate on the Chilton Autobody text line 95795. You look at these NBA coaches. Which one could you take? Pop, I wouldn't want any part of.
No, you could take Pop. You got to go with the old guys and the small guys.
Don't you think he'd shove you in the small of the back or something and...
Yeah, but I don't know how much force would be behind that shove.
Okay.
He's like 70.
You were asking Ramona Shelburne about unexpected potential
71
NBA champs. By the way, you can take D'Antoni. You ain't taking D'Antoni because he played.
No, yeah, D'Antoni was really good.
Isn't that why? Didn't Kobe pick the number 8
because he watched him in Italy?
Wore it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, now, he's 68,
maybe.
Though.
Yeah.
See, I think the trick with some of these over 65 guys is you just take the ball out and start sprinting. You know? Like, if you're starting at the three-point line, I believe I can beat Mike D'Antoni and Greg Popovich to the baseline 10 times out of 10 right now.
But if it's winners, and you know those guys can still
shoot. If it's
shoot,
winners, you better not let them get the ball.
Jim Barnett is in his 70s.
He can still knock him down.
He's still a knockdown shooter.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No, that's why I said I didn't think there's a lot of guys I could beat. I'm just saying... If you're looking to take a shot, you go with the oldest guys and the guys who played the least ball.
I like this one from the 805. Any Van Gundy, you name him. But they're not actually coaching right now.
Yeah. First of all, not available. Yeah, see, Eric Spoelstra is the sort of guy that I think I would not want to underestimate. You know what I mean? Because he actually is pretty young and fit by NBA coach standards.
Right.
There aren't any Frank Laydens out there anymore. They're all relatively fit.
Oh, man, I did not know that Eric Spoelstra was born in my hometown.
How about that?
Born in Evanston, Illinois. He did not grow up there. That's why I didn't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, anyway. You know everybody in Evanston, Illinois?
I know most of the famous people that were born in Evanston, Illinois. Yeah, I do.
Tremendous.
It's my town. I'm proud of my town.
Kolsky says, as we get ready for the NBA playoffs, and you know, at some point the finals will be here, he says, the teams that you think, if I'm not mistaken, I don't mean to speak for you, the teams that we think are going to win, it's going to be somebody else. What is this theory based on?
That's not a theory I have. I do think that this year, unlike, frankly, most years in the history of the NBA, but certainly unlike the last 5 years, there really is no proven commodity. There's no NBA team that, like, I feel like I know exactly what I'm going to get when we head into the playoffs and we're competing for a title.
Ray, isn't that giving short shrift to the team that won the freaking championship last year? And I know Kawhi's not there, but the Toronto Raptors are defending NBA champions. They're not proven?
I think the assumption that they're not proven is false on its face. But I think you can make the case that they're different without Leonard than without. I think a lot of people thought they wouldn't be nearly as good as they've been.
I did.
But Pascal Siakam is better positioned than anybody else to be the first guy in NBA history to win the most improved player twice in a row. I mean, that's either a statement about him being horrible when he first started, which I don't believe is true.
Lucas.
Or what his upside really is.
Lucas, when's the first time I said that to you? Go ahead. It was before the season the first time I said that to you about Pascal Siakam. And I totally agree. And yet, to suggest that the Toronto Raptors, absent Kawhi Leonard, are a proven commodity is absurd to me.
Is it a Canadian bias you have?
Yeah. No Canadian can ever be considered a proven commodity. Haven't we realized that? No, seriously. I mean, yes, they won the title last year, but that's not this team. This is a different team that is as constituted and not a proven commodity.
So what you're saying, and you'd be accurate if this is what you're saying, is none of these teams have won, as currently constituted, none of these teams have won a championship.
None of them have even been to the finals. Right?
So that suggests that the teams that have the best records are less likely
to get
to the
finals? The Bucks haven't even been to the conference finals, have they?
Last year.
Did they? Yeah. I thought they lost in the...
They lost to the Raptors. They won the first two, and then they lost the next four.
In the conference finals. You're right. Yeah.
So they haven't been to the conference finals since last year.
The furthest any team that looks anything like its previous version has been is the conference All right, maybe you guys think that's nothing. Fair enough.
I think what you're saying is it's accurate, but I don't know how significant it is, and maybe it is, but I don't know how we would measure that.
Well, yeah. Who were the favorites?
Win.
Who were the favorites most years of your life? Wasn't it a team?
George Mikan's Minneapolis Lakers, mister.
All right. Maybe there's nothing there. Sorry.
No. We're just discussing it. It's an interesting theory.
I'm pointing out a fact, right? Which is that...
Well, it's not a fact that these teams yet are not going to win. We don't know that yet. That's why I say it's a theory, right? Because you're theorizing likely.
But I'm not. I'm not theorizing. I'm pointing out that most NBA seasons, we go in with a clear idea of the favorites, and some, if not all, of those favorites have been a group that has had great success, like going to an NBA Finals at the least. And this year, we really don't have a single team that has that kind of medal. Even if you're talking about the Spurs of the late Duncan, early Kawhi era, right? There's still, like, the core of that team in many ways had been through the wars, and that was part of what made us respect them and part of why we sort of knew what we would get to a degree when they got into the playoffs.
No, I see what you're saying.
These Bucks, last year they were a great regular season team that ran into some trouble stylistically in the playoffs and sort of looked like maybe they didn't have enough,
That's
right?
One of the things, Matt, that
I rolled my eyes at when people would say the Warriors win every year. You know they're going to win, and it's bad for the league because if you look at the history of the league, to your point, most years
it's the whole
the vast
history.
Majority of years you've had a really good idea who was probably going to win.
Yeah, exactly.
And those teams usually did win.
Exactly.
Or at least get to the finals.
Or at least get to the finals,
yeah.
Right? Or
yeah.
One of the three teams that was in that category wins, or two of them get to the whatever it is. And this year, that team just kind of doesn't exist. So even though this consensus top three has developed where everyone has kind of fallen towards the idea that Milwaukee and the two LA teams are by far more likely to win, I just look at them and look, the Lakers have been the best team in the league, in the West, all year long, right?
Yes.
Milwaukee's been the best team in the league pretty much all year long. I'm not sure what I'm going to get out of Milwaukee when they get to the playoffs. I expect Giannis to be very good, but I know, and I think this is a criticism of your guy Mike Budenholzer too, his teams have somewhat of a history of regular season success that outpaces expectations and then sort of falling back to earth a little bit come playoff time, right? The Hawks team that he coached did that, last year's Bucks team. And with the Lakers, look, I picked the Lakers to win the title, but LeBron, AD, who's their third best player?
Yeah, so who does Matt like? We'll find out in just a moment. First, I want to welcome you to your 3 o'clock hour.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.